Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. And this is Michael Kassler, your host for the day. Man, what a crazy week we've had. I can't wait to get into talking about some of the tech issues and concerns and news and things that have been happening. We're going to have, hopefully, we'll find out. We're going to have, I believe, though, our good friend and geek, Jay Garman, going to be on to talk to us about some geek trivia. We got a Gemini 16 question to answer from last week, and I'm sure he'll give us something to chew on for this coming week as well. And there's no other guests this week. Now, that you may look at that, you may say, hey, that's a bad thing, Mike. I don't want to listen to just you. But the good side of it is, if you do like our cool sites of the week and you like our podcast only songs of the week, we're definitely going to make time for all of that good stuff today, even with all of this tech news that's been happening this week. And I got to start now. We just said goodbye to the sports guys. If you don't listen to the show early enough to catch them, you really should tune in to WRLR about an hour or 2 hours earlier than the Tech Talk show, if you can get yourself out of bed that early, because the Sports Corner has just got some fantastic information, news, get you all up to date and what to look out for the coming week of football and all other sports of importance. But if you're like me, the only sport you really care about this point in the year is football. And the only reason you really care about that sport is because it's fantasy football. And I got to admit, I am a big fantasy football freak. I just love it. I'm on two different leagues. I do a one on ESPN and one on NFL.com, and just have a blast with it. It gives me a reason to watch these games that I otherwise would have absolutely no consideration for at all. And in this last week, I was very, very happy not to be part of the Yahoo line of fantasy sport players. Reason being, of course, that Yahoo had a huge, people are calling it an epic fantasy football fail. And I have to, I mean, this is about the worst case scenario you could picture for a fantasy football server to go down. The timing, it didn't happen on the Super Bowl, right? That's about the only silver lining to that cloud that you can provide. It happened at 1 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday, right before the games were about to begin. Now, that is traditionally the time that you go in and you make your lineup changes. You find out who's called out for the game, who went from questionable to inactive. You make changes on your defense and decide if maybe the 49ers are a better play than the Ravens this week. Yeah, nobody involved with Yahoo mobile or desktop could make any of those changes. And they had a lot of really, really angry people. Now, the president of Yahoo did send out a apology letter. I actually got one as well, because I do have a Yahoo Fantasy account, even though I don't use it this year. And basically what they said, and I don't know, you know, how technical this guy is, but what he says is that Yahoo, and this is a direct quote, at Yahoo, we have giant machines we call filers that process a lot of real-time data and stats for us and for you. Now, filers, I don't know if he meant to say file servers. I've never heard of a machine called a filer. I guess it could be some kind of obscure or abstruse database sort of server, but I hadn't heard of it. He goes on to say they do millions of calculations every hour for their games, and normally the machines can handle this with no problem. Recently, we discovered a hardware issue in one of the filers that caused the other one to overload. They replaced hardware, they reconfigured the setup, did some testing, and eventually they got back up. So they still haven't completely and 100% fixed it. I think the line this week is not going to be on who's going to score the most points or how badly the Bears are going to tumble without Cutler leading the charge, but is going to be what are the odds that Yahoo is going to be able to maintain their systems throughout the games on Sunday. So I don't know who wants to take odds on that, but that's that'll be interesting. Now the other big news in Chicago, totally unrelated to technology, but I just have to throw it in here. Hostess is dying. They're gone, guys, and that means no more Twinkies. So just had to throw that in there. I know it has nothing to do with tech, but I just wanted to express my sadness and dismay that this is happening. I'm sure Jay will have something to contribute on that end as well. And may even, I'm guessing, now here's my line for the week. My guess is Jay's going to have something queued up on the Twinkie for us to talk about for our geek trivia. If not, I'm going to bug him and I'm going to tell him he missed his golden opportunity. golden sponge cake opportunity, I should say. At any rate, back on to tech news. Of course, you know, really the biggest news of this last week or so has been about General Petraeus and how he wound up being caught in a little bit of infidelity. He had a paramour that was Broadmoor, who was his also a biographer of him and was embedded with him in more than one sense of the word, I guess you would say. Leaving the politics aside, leaving the General Petraeus verbiage to the other end of the table, really what's kind of interesting to me is here you have someone who's the head of the CIA, very, very involved, you would assume, in tradecraft, in spycraft, in the ability and the process of identifying and tracking down individuals who specifically are attempting to hide themselves and hide their communications from people such as General Petraeus and his lover, Patricia Broadmoor. But he still got caught. They still got caught, even though this is someone at the head of the organization. I think there's a couple of things that show you that tell you this here, is that number one, people do stupid things, period. It doesn't matter how smart they are and how informed and how knowledgeable they are and what level of any organization, including our own U.S. government, they are. They do stupid things. They're driven by motivations which lead them to do things that may not be the most logical things to do, and that causes them to forget even some of the basic crafts of their trade, including this. I think the other thing it tells you, though, too, is how incredibly and insanely easy it is these days to be caught and to be tracked if someone's really interested in doing it. Now, the way that they went about trying to cover their tracks, Petraeus and Broadmoor, was a very common step that people take in this situation. In fact, it was reported on back when the whole Al-Qaeda thing was blowing up and Osama bin Laden was being tracked and all this, is that they were not sending each other emails. What they had done is they had created a couple of anonymous Gmail accounts. Very easy to do. There's no verification needed for you to create a new Gmail account with any word, any name you want to have with it, and that's all well and good. But rather than using that to send emails back and forth, what they did is they shared with each other in a personal meeting the password to get into this account. And so if General Petraeus wanted to leave a message for Ms. Broadmoor, rather than sending her an email, he would create an email and save it in the drafts folder. And then she could go in and look in the drafts, read the email, write her response, leave that also in the drafts. And so, you know, the mental concept here is that there's no email actually traversing through the internet. So it makes it more difficult to track. And certainly it does. It's a more difficult thing to track down, but it's still not impossible. It turns out that, of course, Google, because all of their servers are in the cloud, even those draft messages still get transmitted from server to server and from location to location. They leave their path and they leave their track. And where you edit and update that information from, that IP address is also captured and tracked as well, or at least it can be. And that's one of the ways that they were able to track this down. Now, one additional clue that they got to link it directly to Broadmoor was that she used a number of these kind of dummy accounts, anonymous accounts, to send threats to a Miss Kelly, a socialite down in Florida. And there, she was trying, again, to be very careful about how she did this. And what she would do is she would only send these emails when she was away from her home. She would only do it from internet cafes, from hotels in various cities that she was at. Again, using this, using these anonymous Gmail accounts. And of course, what happened though is that IP address that she was using was correlated against the hotels and cities that she was at by the FBI when they looked at it. And it got to the point where it was very clear this had to be Mrs. Broadmoor. It's kind of crazy. It's, as I said, more surprising perhaps that they weren't aware that this could be done than that they allowed it to happen. So the natural question is, Mike, hey, I want to do something hinky. How do I get away with it then? Now I'm not really trying to do anything too sneaky myself. I'm just not a real sneaky guy, but I do know that there's a lot of ways to do this that would have been a lot more successful. The one that comes up just really off the top of my head is if you want to hide your IP address, which is, this is what Paula Broadmoor should have done in this most recent thing, is she should have used a VPN connection of some sort. Now Tor, if you go there, is a free service. You can go download this application and it will reroute your linkage through servers that do not store the originating IP address. That's the whole point of them, is to allow for anonymous access. Anonymizer is another one too that I'm familiar with. Again, using one of those is the best way to make sure that at least your IP information is not going to be tracked. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be tracked via those emails, email accounts, email addresses, that emails that you send and store are not going to be captured and saved on those servers somewhere. Even if it's a cloud server like Google, they store a lot of that traffic and traction. However, there's ways around that too. Now, we've talked about a number of these on air here in the past, and I don't know if you recall, we've had some as cool sites. I've never really had as I said, a real desperate use for them myself. I just don't get involved in that many hinky things that I need to do this. But if you want to send an email to somebody that is not going to be tracked, that is not going to be available, that no one will be able to know what it was. Now, they may know that an email was sent, but they won't know what the content of that message was, is you can use one of these self-destruct email services. I believe the one that we talked about on air was PrivNote. And this message will self-destruct was another one of the websites that we went to. I'll put links to those and a couple of others up online. But basically the idea is, again, similar to Tor, there's a server that you put your message into and you get a link to it, a shortened link. You send the link to the person that you want to read this message, not the message itself. Once you send that link to them, they get it, they click through, and with these services, you can identify, boom, it's gone once it's read once. Or you can say, you know, let it be read three or four times, or give it a time frame and say, this message is available for 2 days. If they do not read it in that time, or if they've read it and then leave, boom, it's going to be destroyed. It'll never be available again. That would have made things much, much more difficult for the FBI to track down. So I certainly don't condone any of the behavior that went on in this case. I don't condone using these services for illegitimate purposes, but you would think, you would presume that someone at the highest levels of our organizations that are created in order to track this kind of activity down would be aware of these and would know somewhat how to use them, and they don't. So they got a little dinged with that. You know what I'm going to do right now is I am actually going to try and give our good friend Jay Garman a call and see if we can pull him into the conversation. I think this is a good time for it. And do we have them here? Let's see. And of course, I'm always wondering every week. You know what I need to do? I do need to get a little Jay Garman music.
Hello.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Garman. Hey, good.
How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Better than General Petraeus, who we were just talking about here.
I had a 50-50 shot. It was either going to be intelligence failures or Twinkies.
I hit both of them already this morning. I only gave a one-liner on the Twinkie thing because I couldn't think of a real legitimate tech connection with the Twinkies other than the obvious junk food geek coder kind of meme. So, but the General Petraeus stuff though is fascinating. I was just talking about how it's astonishing to me that someone who is at the upper echelons of our spy craft business, the head of the CIA, really wasn't just a little bit smarter about how to hide his own tracks.
Well, my take on that is a bit more cynical. I don't think that he couldn't have done a better job. I think it was just sort of a... They had no reason. I am certain that this was not an unknown affair. I think they had no reason to pursue it or illuminate it until it became entangled in another investigation. I suspect that, especially with our intelligence gathering services domestically, there's a whole lot of dirty laundry out there that no one chooses to air until they're forced to. I think he knew that equation. He's sort of like, yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody knows about this, but the people who don't need to know about it don't know about it, namely people in his personal life.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I hadn't really thought about it from that side of things. I just kind of thought it was a little bit of arrogance mixed up with a hefty dose of incompetence, or ignorance. But that makes sense too. That makes sense too. Just never thought it would come up, I guess.
Well, if you want to actually get into a tech direction, really hardcore security guys don't believe in 100% security. The metaphors that some of these guys, because we've talked to them at Epify, and they're like, look, you don't need a safe in your house unless you live in a neighborhood that's constantly robbed and you own things that thieves know are worth robbing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, locks are fine. So a standard deadbolt lock is fine for your house and terrible for a bank. A bank needs a vault. You put defenses symmetric with expected threats. Actually, you put defenses one notch or two notches above the expected peak threat.
Mm-hmm.
Not the median threat, the peak threat, depending on what your loss is. So I'm certain that Petraeus knew exactly what the operational risk, if you will, of this dalliance and his communications methods were. He just, I'm certain, assessed that his security precautions were sufficiently above the perceived threat, namely his wife finding out.
Yep, yeah. Which I mean, in looking at it in that manner, he was absolutely correct. The chances of his wife being able to you know, figure out and get into the Gmail account drops that they had set up and, you know any of that business is very, very slim. The chances would be virtually none because he wasn't even doing any of this effort, of course, at home or in his office. This was only when he was remote. So, I guess looking at it from that respect, he was at least doing the... the amount of security that he needed to have to manage that perceived threat.
Well, and here's where you can get into this rabbit hole of self-justification, but it's interesting that this technique of using Gmail drafts without ever sending anything is a known terrorist technique that basically the CIA and the NSA know to watch for.
Yep.
And if the CIA knew he was having an affair and was curious about whether or not he was divulging highly classified secrets to an unsecured confidant, namely his mistress, then it would not have been hard for them to get into that Gmail drop and figure out what they were saying. And if they looked at it and saw that it was strictly personal business, they would have had no issue. So yep. He actually may have optimized his communications for the person I don't want to find this out won't, but the people who are threatened by me finding this out can verify I'm not doing anything that bothers them.
Yeah. Yep. Although, I know, you know, one thing you always hear a lot about is that they don't want individuals, especially at that level, to have to be having these affairs. This was one of the don't tell or whatever it was called. You know, those laws too was the idea was that don't ask, don't tell. That was what I was looking for. Was the idea that having these type of illicit relationships or relationships that could be used to blackmail them, that alone was enough of a security risk that they didn't want them to occur. But apparently that was not a huge concern for him.
No, because I think that his again, to be cynical, the equation is the establishment viewed him as a valuable asset, and it was in their interest to prevent this from coming to light. It was only in the investigation of the other general and the criminal investigation of the potential mistress there going nuts about Petraeus' mistress.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of like, this investigation is going to come to light. They're going to request all our notes on it. That's going to include all the crap going on with Petraeus. Oh, dear.
I'm waiting for the Lifetime movie to come out and explain it all to me. And then... I'll be all set. Or this may be big enough. It may make it to mainstream TV, CBS movie or Fox movie or something.
Believe it or not, I've actually considered writing a blog post about how this is actually strangely parallel to the Matt Honan data loss earlier this summer, where the Amazon and Apple security protocols, hackers got enough between the two of them to wipe out all his online accounts and wipe his MacBook and his iPad and his iPhone. And I think my point with that was that the more places you put what you consider mild security risks, all those collective mild security risks can interact in unexpected ways to compromise larger security. So I'm certain that Petraeus thought he was taking the appropriate risks for all the security threats he thought he could conceive of, but he could not have predicted, you know, one mistress being threatened by another and that mistress having a second confidant who was an FBI investigator who would go rogue and illegally read email and bring that to, like, no one could predict that.
Yeah.
But you put yourself vulnerable to that by having this dirty laundry.
Yep.
So this whole notion of, oh, I'm completely secure because this is not a risk, is complete fallacy.
Exactly. Yeah, and all it takes is one person in this, you know, I mean, they called it this, it wasn't even a triad of relationships. It was a pentagon of relationships, appropriately enough. And all you need is one person to go crazy and go ballistic. And that person in this case sounded like it was Kelly. And, there you go. The whole thing comes tumbling down, unfortunately for all of us, but most particularly Petraeus and his wife and the other people, the casualties involved, I guess.
So the two lessons are, one, don't have an affair, and two, use paper and burn it.
Exactly. I'm still amazed that I convinced one lovely lady to meet with me and be interested in spending more than a couple of hours talking to me. The chances of finding a second that would put up with my garbage for any length of time is vanishingly small. So fortunately, I just don't have those concerns. It just is not a worry for me.
Exactly. I am in exactly the same boat you are. It's like I wake up every day surprised that there's still a woman next to me. Exactly. And that there is not a sharp object protruding from some part of my anatomy for some crime I am obviously guilty of.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Exactly right. Oh, man. Well, so, and you brought this up, so I'm gonna redirect this just a little bit here. So, we're gonna lose our Twinkies. We've lost our Twinkies. They're dying in our fruit pies. I always was a big fan of the Hostess fruit pies, actually.
No, we're not. Hostess is going out of business, but the Twinkie, if you're a fan of, like, Snowballs or Ding Dongs, I'd be worried. The Twinkie will be fine. They're going to liquidate their assets. They're going to sell their recipes and their intellectual property. Somebody else is going to be making Twinkies soon. They just won't call them Hostess Twinkies. And oh, by the way, there's already a sub-licensee in Canada. Canadian Twinkies were never made by Hostess. They're made by some other company, which retains the rights. So you can just cross the border and get Twinkies at will right now.
and I have seen those Canadian Twinkies actually already being posted up on eBay at ridiculous prices. In the box, you can tell they're Canadian because the box is slightly different. The colors around the letters and things like that. And I presume, I haven't looked close enough, but I presume that there's French Canadian scrawled all over it somewhere too.
Almost certainly. And here's what's funny is, part of the reason that Hostess was in such dire straits is that people aren't eating as much junk like Twinkies anymore. But the second you find out you can't have them, everybody wants a Twinkie.
My wife was scrambled to Target, yesterday morning or the morning before? Got there sometime after 10:30, and already the shelves were bare. Completely emptied of all Hostess related things. She was able to grab one bag of these powdered donuts, which I had not even ever heard of before, and said that was her one contribution to the possible bankruptcy of Hostess, is she was going to buy a bag of donuts.
Yeah, it's like one last hurrah before we put this away, this childish thing, like that all these, you know, because I grew up with the chocolate donuts. That was my Hostess indulgence.
Oh, yes.
The little cake chocolate donuts that were just horrible for you.
Yep, I do remember those. I do remember those. And no matter, it seemed like they were just stale in the bag instantly.
They arrived stale.
Yes, and I guess that was part of the charm, really.
Well, you didn't care. You get a box, like a shoebox of them. That's what it looked like a plastic top shoebox and some milk, and you sat in front of the TV and watched cartoons on Saturday morning, because guess what, younger kids? That was the only day of the week that cartoons came on when Mike and I were growing up, was Saturday morning.
Yep.
And you got up at the crack of dawn, and you sat down with your junk food and your cereal, and you watched until about lunchtime.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That was Saturday morning. That was your one shot at cartoons, sugar pops, crispy, crunchy, sugary everything, and that was it. You know, we got it all. You had to get it all in those 4, 5, 6 hours that you had. I love, and this is from George Takei's, shared this, but it's from Some E-Cards, is he posted a one of these Some E-Cards things. It says, so Twinkies, which were supposed to survive a nuclear holocaust, die 3 weeks before the end of the world. Well played, Mayans. Because, of course, we're supposed to have the end of the world coming up here in about 3 weeks, mid-December, and Twinkies just aren't going to quite make it.
Yeah, supposedly. But which apocalypse is this? You know, I've had so many since Y2K. I forget now.
Yeah, exactly. This is the one that was the misreading of the Mayan calendar and a misunderstanding of what the whole situation was about that was done. So at least it's, you know, for just for a change of pace, it's not related to somebody misreading the Bible. So, you know, at least that's kind of a good step in the right direction.
Well, you say misreading like it was some sort of unintentional mistake.
Well, okay, yes, you've got that. I did use that word inappropriately. Yeah, I think most of the time, well, especially these most recent cases, you've got people intentionally abusing the words of someone's sacred text to get these points across. This one, I think, was at least somewhat unintentional with the Mayan, at least the original review of the Mayan calendar was unintentional. Of course, soon thereafter, they corrected themselves and realized, but by then the damage was done.
Right, well, once the meme is out into the idiot sphere, there's no getting it back. Oh, by the way, people, yes, we actually landed on the moon.
Exactly. I'm looking forward, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have on, and I'm going to have to do this, unfortunately, I'm going to have to do this on as a pre-recorded session. I can't remember the guy's name. I know his first name is Sam, but he wrote a book called The Half-Life of Facts, and talking exactly about how difficult it is to pull back wrong information and how long these things that we think we know tend to kind of just, as you said, last out there in the idiot sphere and never make their way back. You know, like the idea that spinach has got, you know, the highest amount of iron, which was caused by a misplaced decimal point back in the early 1900s. Never, you know, figured it out right away, but by then it was too late and we had Popeye telling us things, you know, and that was enough.
Well, actually, my favorite one of those is the notion that carrots are good for your eyes. Mm. Don't get me wrong. Carrots are a great food. They're a great source of vitamins. You should absolutely eat them. They don't help your eyes. And this was actually intentionally misrepresented. I'll give you a little bonus trivia here. When the Royal Air Force in World War II was able to defend Britain with the use of radar, and they didn't want anyone to know that they had radar, and so they intentionally put completely ridiculous stories in the media that the reason their pilots could see so well at night is they ate a lot of carrots.
Yep, and in fact, though, I believe that they were, in fact, telling this to the pilots, too, some of them, right? Because wasn't there an issue where some of the pilots were actually turning orange because of the excess carotene?
Well, they made the pilots actually buy into that. Like, they weren't actually eating a lot of carrots just because of rationing, I think. And so the pilots, I don't think, believed it, but they were that's part of why they brought in the story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's where we get, like, carrot cake and stuff was used because sugar, you couldn't get sugar, but carrots would add sweetness to cakes and all this. And yeah. No, it's a fascinating period. It's such a rich, period of our history for trivia and for odd bits of information and things that were learned and unlearned and discovered and so on. Obviously a tragic period of our history too, but just very so many crazy things going on I'm looking forward to bringing Sam on to talk to him about exactly how these things kind of just spin off into, you know, out of control, and we just can't bring them back for some reason.
Well, yeah, and I'm also curious about the role of the internet in being such a powerful debunker now, like Snopes and to a lesser degree Wikipedia. Like, when I do a lot of research on my trivia stuff, it's like, it is commonly believed X. Turns out X is actually Y and Z because A, B, C, and D are idiots.
Yep. Well, and so I find Snopes incredibly useful, but I also, too, just find it so demoralizing sometimes because someone will send me something, and it's so clearly, junk. And you can apply some heuristics to the Facebook posts and the emails that you get. You know, it's like, if it doesn't have a date associated with it, it's probably not legitimate. If it doesn't, you know, there's some things you can go through. But I'll go on to Snopes and look these up. And they'll have been floating around for literally years and sometimes decades of, you know, of misinformation about lost children or, you know, scare warnings about look out for hypodermic needles in the gas pumps and things like this.
Yeah, at some point, I think some of these rumors are just blatant trolling, and my parents were gullible forever for this, and just like, you're so cynical, and, you know, your Uncle Bobby isn't sending me crap, and you don't believe in it. I finally got it through to her when she got some sort of, you know, got to get political. Like, the left is destroying this country by canceling all of our best war technology. And it was this long rant. It was showing pictures of this new war plane that they weren't going to fund and how the lead pilot on the project was a woman. It isn't that great. And it was all stills from the horrible Jessica Biel movie Stealth.
That's classic.
Can you believe this? I said, no, I can't believe that. That's from a movie.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Here, let me show you the movie poster. Let me show you the actress. And here she is in this romantic comedy with Kevin James.
Yep.
It's like, oh.
That's classic. That's now, I have to say, my parents, one way or the other, just don't buy into a lot of that stuff. I get a ton of... hey, look at this funny dog picture kind of thing, but not, you know, not, and the of course the you know, obligatory inappropriate jokes from dad that that I'm embarrassed to have in my email box, let alone to share with anyone else. but outside of that, they do okay. They do okay.
Well, you know, I gotta tell, I think I finally trained her, Mom. If it comes in and all the text is in this font we call Comic Sans, just don't believe it.
Yes. That's a good heuristic to apply to pretty much anything, really. If it's in Comic Sans, it can be ignored. that I believe is a completely appropriate statement on every level.
I do as well, because I don't know who I don't know what word processing program in like 2002 that was one of the top three default fonts in. But it's like the only legitimate use I've ever seen of it, and this is legitimate in scare quotes, meaning the information I received via this medium is not false, is like school newsletters.
Yes, yes, yes. And you see it overused there. Now, and here's the cultural flip to that as well, is I live and my children go to a school district which has a very high population of Hispanics, which is great. And they're learning Spanish in school, and it's a fantastic opportunity. And I see newsletters written in both English and Spanish. The English side, always written in Comic Sans. The Spanish side, and this must drive people who speak Spanish just as crazy as Comic Sans does us, always, always written in that really lame salsa font. with the little stars around the eyes. And oh my gosh, every time I see it, I cringe. I just think, you know, I would be so mad if I was Mexican and everything that I had presented to me came in this salsa font.
Yeah, it's like, if we're using like formal English spelling, do we put it in like original Courier? Like, really? Or, you know, or does Italian have to be in Times New Roman? Is that the rule now?
Yeah, exactly.
Are we ethnically profiling our fonts?
That's it. It's like, oh, here, you know what? It's for our Mexican friends. We must write it like this so that it will be understandable to them. I don't understand. I don't get it. And I wonder if there's fonts like that for other cultures too. Like, is there an Italian font? Like, if you live or work somewhere where there's a lot of Italians, native Italians, where there's a lot of native French or Pakistani, is there some font that gets associated with that language too, you know? I just don't know.
There is an Ig Nobel Prize for whoever does the doctoral thesis on this.
Yes. And I'd like to know, is Salsa font more or less legible for someone who speaks Spanish as their native language? or believable?
That's a good question. Do the Spanish native characters like the Enye, you know, render better in Salsa? Have they done that? Or that's going to be what's really ironic is if that particular font doesn't have the non-English characters rendered very well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would be curious about that myself. Oh, man. Man, well, we've gone pretty far afield here. We should probably bring it back to our usual discussion. I did promise people, because it's been several weeks, I promised that I would actually make time for some cool sites of the week this week, and I'm going to give some self-destruct email sites to follow up on the whole Petraeus scandal. But we should probably discuss some of the geek trivia. I know we had a great space-related one last week.
Yes. So we're approaching, I believe, the 46th anniversary of Gemini 12, mm-hmm. which is one of the last, if not the last, Gemini missions. And it was the first mission that had a very particular training technique that is still in use. And that particular training technique was underwater neutral buoyancy training. This was the first time they used that to train for outer space, specifically. Which was interesting because the guy who is generally credited with coming up with it, although he denies it, is Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So it was Buzz Aldrin, famous for the moon landing, and Jim Lovell, famous for not landing on the moon, Apollo 13, were the two guys. And the main thrust of Gemini 12, because all the Gemini was getting ready, basically setting the stage for Apollo, was extravehicular activity. And they were having a huge problem. And Gemini 11 was basically a failure. They couldn't get EVA to work really well. And they just weren't able to train for it. And what's interesting is that astronauts had done a great deal of scuba survival training with actual SEAL teams as part of their survival training for the splashdown portions of the Mercury and Gemini missions. So they were all fairly proficient divers. And it was basically at that point that they were still using the dive planes to do like 20 seconds of zero G training for EVAs, and it wasn't working. And Aldrin and the gang were basically like, you know, we all float in the pool. We could set up some neutral buoyancy with proper weighting and do pretty close to zero G training just underwater. And we're going to be in spacesuits anyway. Why not?
Yeah.
And it totally worked. And to this day, all astronauts training for extravehicular activity do neutral buoyancy training and make big swimming pools.
which would be kind of fun anyways, I think. At least probably more fun than the giant spinner that you always see being used.
Absolutely. Well, and to circle back to our idiot, you know, sort of ideas that get out into the idiot sphere and you can't get it back, the number one most annoying question you ask any space camp or JPL tour guide is, where is the zero gravity room? Because you always see it in the movies, right?
Yeah.
Where you just got some room where they can magically turn the gravity off.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. And I can imagine some of the responses they come up to for that, too. You know, if only we did. If only we had a room like that and the ability to turn gravity off for some period of time or in some location. That would be a very, very cool thing. I remember, in fact, the original, the book that the Thing is based upon, that was one of the alien pieces of technology that they discovered when they broke into the hut that the alien had been using for its experiments to try and get back to space.
I believe the story is called Who Goes There.
That's it. Who Goes There. Yes. SIMAC? No. Gosh darn it. Oh, man. And of course, I've got my computer. I should look it up. Someone will post, I'm sure, on Facebook. Who was the original author of that, of Who Goes There?
Yeah, and I can't think of it. I will say, though, I recommend, and it's, I believe it's available free online, Peter Watts wrote a fictionalized version of the 1981 John Carpenter's Thing from the perspective of the monster called Things. It explains its motivation and its sort of psychology. It is really, really creepy, and it's really, really good.
Ah, cool. I, Yeah, that was I would love to read that. Who was the author of that one again?
Peter Watt. He's famous for a book called Blindsight.
Excellent. I'm going to look that one up. That'll go on my reading list for sure. It's John Campbell. John Campbell wrote Who Goes There.
That's right. Yeah, the guy for whom the Campbell Award is named, right?
Yeah. I feel like an idiot for not being able to remember that. But no, fantastic book of quite a bit different from the movies. Generally, I haven't seen this most recent one, but it's definitely worth going back and reading if you haven't read it before. And good stuff. So what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, we're coming up this week on the 40th anniversary of the release of Pong, which is just a minor moment in geek history, if you will.
Yeah.
Atari's first big, it was actually the first commercially successful arcade game, a really big hit, and there's a lot of trivia tied up in Pong. But what's interesting is the reason that Nolan Bushnell had Atari develop the game Pong. It wasn't for the intention of developing an arcade game. So the question is, why is the real reason Nolan Bushnell had Atari develop the Pong video game?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a great question. I have no idea. And I was kind of a Pong fanatic. I remember when those were first coming into my local stores with the stand-up arcade Pong games and playing those. And I also recall that was the very first video game that I learned to cheat on. They had a little switch on it that you could switch from slow speed to fast speed. And I learned that if I held my hand over that switch, that a lot of people that I played didn't know about it. And I could, when the ball was coming towards me, switch it to slow and flip it back to fast when it was going towards them.
Oh, you little con artist.
Oh, yes. And I started early. I skin of my teeth missed out on spending some serious time with our government somehow. I'm fascinated. That is a great question. I'm very interested to hear that. Jay, I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna let people know that they gotta go to jaygarman.net and find out more about what's going on with you.
I will update that site then. That would be a good idea.
yeah, because you got some other stuff going on now, and some time is opening up for you, I know. So individuals that are interested in getting some Jay advice and stuff, this is the place to go now. Is jaygarman.net and see what kind of things you got going on.
Absolutely. Well, you have a good weekend, buddy, and get those cool sites out there before they skin you.
I absolutely will. Yeah, we're running out of time already. So thanks, Jay. I appreciate you coming on, as always, and we'll talk at you next week.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye. Jay Garman, jaygarman.net. You got to go there. Check it out. Always great to have him on. Man, it's been a while since we had that kind of time to talk with Jay. Very much appreciated his time and efforts. As I said, he's got some cool things going on. So go check that out. I'm going to do a really fast little spot and promo, a little break here that we're going to do, give you about a minute's worth of it. And then you're going to come back because you're going to want to come back to Tech Talk on WRLR in about a minute and a half. Why? Because we got cool sites of the week coming up. Don't miss them. Stay tuned. We'll be right back at you.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
What are you looking at?
Tune in to Jason's Mixtape, Sunday nights at 6 p.m., right here on 98.3 WRLR. From the Beatles to Britney, the Rolling Stones to Rihanna, Frank Sinatra to the Foo Fighters, the Doobie Brothers to Depeche Mode, and Van Morrison to Van Halen. We play yesterday's favorites and today's hits. Each week highlights a featured year.
This kitten got your tongue tied in knots, I see.
Jason's Mixtape on WRLR.
Superwash is a proud sponsor of programming on WRLR 98.3 FM. Superwash is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and provides automated and do-it-yourself car washes. Superwash services the Lake County and surrounding area, located at 1750 Orchard Lane in Round Lake Beach. For additional information, the phone number is 847-740-2613. Superwash, often imitated, never duplicated.
Set the speakers to 11 and get ready for the musical onslaught of Metal Mayhem. Your host, Carolyn, will take you on a whirlwind tour of the world's metal scenes. Every Wednesday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., you can hear some of the most unique metal anywhere, exclusively on WRLR 98.3.
And we are back on Tech Talk. And as promised, I'm not going to let you down here. We have got some cool sites of the week lined up, ready to go. So, man, there's so many. Now, I am going to put some links, like I said, to some of those easily disposable email addresses. So I'm not going to go through those, though, but I'll put up a few links for that on the website. You can go find us anytime you want to at techtalk.wrlr.fm, or even better nowadays, I actually keep the facebook.com/techtalkwrlr website updated constantly. Lots of good stuff going on in there, so check that out. First thing I want to mention, now we were just talking to Jay, you may not know, or you may know if you pay attention to his website, is an author, and so this is a great month for authors. Did you know this is National Novel Writing Month? And there is a website designed and set up to help you with your first novel if you haven't done one yet, or even if it's not your first but you just need a little bit of boost in the right direction. NaNoWriMo, which stands for National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, is just a fantastic site. Tons of people are involved with it. You can track your progress online. You can talk to other people who are struggling authors, who are already successful authors, get insight and advice on helping you become an author. It's really a cool site, NaNoWriMo.org. Go check that out, and it's going to help you write a novel in a month. So so I love that site, and this is the month for it. It's only through November 30th, but the website itself will stay up, and you can go in. You can also donate if you are not an author yourself or you want to contribute to the help that they've given you. You can donate right on there through them, too. That is a completely free site, of course, which is great. Another cool site I ran across, I'm just going to hop around. A lot of these are going to have absolutely nothing to do with each other's, no theme at all. So let's go to the next site here. Styx, S-T-Y-K-Z, Styx.net. This is a multi-platform stick figure animation program, completely free, open source. Grab it, download it, play with it, have fun. you can make your own little animation out of it. If you have something you want to say to people, you can do it in stick figure format and just have a lot of fun with it. This is great, particularly for kids, early teens, or whatever age, that are starting to learn and play with computers and want to do some animation type stuff with it, without getting, you know, expensive or involved in a lot of extraneous stuff. It just makes it real easy to do. Check it out, Styx.net. Here's another one, talking of graphics and stuff. This is just fun, especially though I find this site useful if you're creating some invitations and cards for people, as far as invitations to your house. It's maps.stamen.com, and that's stamen like the part of the flower. If you go here, what you can do now, it pulls up, it uses Google Maps. You put an address in it, and then you can choose from one of many various and varieties of different map stylings, including toner style, which is just all black and white and grayscale stuff, to terrain. My favorite is watercolor. You can change the map to look like watercolor style, and it sounds like you got to look at it, you got to see it to understand what it is. Now, it does not include the street names in watercolor format. That's the only downside to it, but it looks so cool. I want to have a party at my house just so I can create a map in watercolor format and send it to my friends and have them ask me, how did you get this cool map? That is too neat. So check that out. Maps.stamen.com. I'm going to give you one last one. Now, this is, now my wife gets so mad at me. This is one of my personal hobby horses here that I like to get onto and go off against is talking about evidence-based medicine. And I talk to people about this. I get a lot of questions and a lot of dispute and concern about, you know, hey, why would you tell me that I shouldn't do acupuncture? Or why don't you think Reiki makes sense? I mean, hey, if it works, why not, right? This is a place to go to get some questions answered about the reality or unreality of therapies like homeopathy, which you might think is like a natural thing. It's not a natural thing. If you read about what homeopathy actually is, you will realize it is completely and utterly insane. And a good place to go to find information about this is EBM-first.com. That's www.ebm-first.com. And really, just a huge collection of links and research and studies and explanation and information about all of this kind of quackery that's going on that we've started to become so accepting of. And so it's just great, you know, and really can help you build a good strong basis of factual information when it comes to the most important thing you have, which is your health. So take a look at that too. That's EBM-first.com. I am out of here. I'm going to leave you now with the podcast only song of the week. Oh my gosh, what am I going to play for you today? I got to take a look here and just see what I got queued up. You know, this is kind of a more mellow song, but I really like it. It's called Gravity. It's by The Whitest Boy Alive. It's relatively short, so it fits in well because we have relatively little time left here in the day. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. This is your host, Michael Kassler, saying goodbye to you this week. I will be back next week, I believe, though, although we are having the Thanksgiving holiday. Have a safe, have a healthy, have a fun Thanksgiving. Do it with your family. Do it with your friends. Share thanks with the people around you that you love. And we will be back and talking to you soon. This is Gravity by The Whitest Boy Alive.
Should not see, and the innocence is killed. Not written, certainly not shown, but eventually what's meant to be covered up gets known. Cause for worry, cause for mine.